Good morning, Council. You may be seated.
Our next case on the calendar is A18-0858, Neil Matthews et al. Versus City of the Village of Minnetonka Beach et al. Council, for appellant, you will have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 5 minutes after for rebuttal, and respondent, you will have 15 minutes for your argument after appellant. Please state your name for the record, the party you're representing, and with that, Council, you may begin.
May it please the court, Patrick B. Steinhoff here on behalf of appellants Nell Matthews and Max Hacker. This is an appeal that arises from two separate resolutions of the respondent city, which is the City of the Village of Minnetonka Beach. The first resolution was a resolution of its Board of Appeals and Adjustments, or its City Council sitting as its Board of Adjustments and Appeals, which rejected an appeal of an administrative planning decision, which was made by my clients. The second resolution was a resolution of the City Council by which the city tried to recoup its outside planning consultant fees from my clients by adding those fees to their property taxes. So there's a bunch of discrete issues that arise from each of these resolutions, and there's really too many to talk about all of them, so I'm going to try to hit what I consider to be the big ticket items, foremost of which is the issue of what happens when you have an appeal to a municipal board of appeals that completely bypasses the planning commission. And a second big issue that is related to that is, can a decision by a city board of appeals have a rational basis if the reason for rejecting that appeal is based entirely on the recommendation of the same person who made the decision that's under appeal? So I'll start with the first of those two issues, the planning commission issue. And the reason I say that that's such an important issue here is that it potentially, depending on how the court decides it, renders some of the other issues moot. It's not so important whether the board had a rational basis or not if it shouldn't have made the decision in the first place because there was no planning commission participation. So here in Minnesota, we have a planning statute, and one provision of that planning statute is 462-354 subdivision 2, which says that in municipalities in which the planning commission is not also the Board of Adjustments and Appeals, the Board of Adjustment and Appeals shall make no decision unless the Planning Commission has an opportunity to review and report on the appeal, either directly or through a authorized representative of the Planning Commission.
Council, so didn't the district court interpret that statute differently than you are?
No, Your Honor, I don't think the district court interpreted the statute differently. I think the district court made a determination that because there was a planning consultant present at this hearing, which was obviously true, that planning consultant participation was sufficient to comply with the statute. And if you read the district court's order, I think it was page 31 to 33 of her memorandum, she doesn't say that this consultant was there as a representative of the Planning Commission. She says he was there advising the Board of Adjustment and Appeals. And that's not what the statute requires. The statute requires that the Planning Commission itself either have an opportunity to review and report on the appeal, or there be an authorized representative of the Planning Commission that does that for it. And that didn't happen here. We have a city in which the City Council, not the Planning Commission, sits as the Board of Adjustment and Appeal. And they had a appeal to that body and a public hearing, and they made a decision. And that decision was based on a report from a consultant. But
the consultant is the city's planning and zoning administrator, correct?
Yes. It's an outside planning consultant that serves as the zoning administrator. But what the statute requires is that the Planning Commission, which is a separate entity composed of people who are appointed to decide and things relating to planning, have a...
The consultant is not part of the Planning Commission.
He's not. He's essentially a staff member of the city. The city's kind of small, so it does that sort of thing by vendor. So the statute requires that either the appeal go through the Planning Commission, it be referred to the Planning Commission, or somebody who's appointed or authorized by the Planning Commission have a chance to weigh in on this. And that didn't happen here. We had essentially a staff member who wasn't authorized by the Planning Commission participate in the process, and that doesn't comply with what the statute requires.
Assuming for purposes of argument that provision of the statute wasn't complied with, what is the appropriate remedy in your view?
I think there's three possible remedies. You could say that no harm, no foul. It's a violation for which there is no remedy. There could be a remand back to the city. The court could send it back to the city for a do-over with proper consultation by the Planning Commission. Or it could be the appeal itself could be deemed granted under the 60-day rule statute, which is 1599. And that third one is what we advocate for. And I think those arguments are pretty well set out in the brief. I'd like to say a few words about why this shouldn't be a no harm, no foul kind of situation. This was a 2-1 vote. We don't know what would have happened if there would have been proper consultation with the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission, they're the institution in the city that has subject matter expertise on matters of planning and zoning. This appeal involved a long list of different issues relating to how to properly apply the city's zoning code. It's possible that the Planning Commission could have weighed in on the side of my clients, and if they would have done that, they could have flipped one vote, two votes. My clients could have prevailed, and we might not be here. So I don't think this is a situation where there shouldn't be a remedy for a statutory violation, because I think it was pretty important considering the nature of the appeal. Your Honor?
I guess, is there any case you can point us to that says if there's one procedural misstep that it's void? And that basically that you would prevail under that 60-day rule. Is there any case that you can direct us to?
Your Honor, as far as I know, there is no such case. It's surprising to me that this hasn't come up in the appellate courts before. What happens under the 60-day rule if you have a vote, but the vote is legally ineffective? So what the 60-day rule requires, I mean, it says if there's a request relating to zoning, which we have, made to a government agency on its own application form, which we also have, there has to be a vote denying it within 60 days, otherwise it's deemed granted or approved. And here, we had a vote. It's just, in my view, it's void. It never happened because they didn't... the other statute that we talked about before says the board shall make no decision unless it does the Planning Commission consultation, and it didn't do that, so its vote isn't effective. So just applying the text of the 60-day rule statute, it should be deemed granted, which is a harsh result.
Well, it would seem to be a harsh result. That's why I'm looking... to you for some authority for that, because if for example, if we viewed this as being non-arbitrary and a reasonable exercise of the entity's power. I think it's Minnetonka Beach Board. If we viewed that as being within their power, are you saying that because the Planning Commission wasn't involved that we can just void it out without any, I mean, what would be our standard of reviewing this, I guess? Because if in fact any, even no matter how minuscule the misstep, any procedural misstep would void out a decision, I mean, that basically that's argued in almost every case that comes before us.
Your Honor,
what authority do you have that it doesn't matter, it's void?
Well, three things, Your Honor. First of all, I mean, this is not just any, it's not a minuscule procedural misstep. I mean, the other statute actually says you shall not make a decision. So that's different than, you know, lack of public notice or some other kind of procedural flaw that might afflict a zoning decision.
I mean, because if there's a lack of a public, you know, notice and a lack of any kind of hearing, you're talking about due process issues. But here we have what appears to be some due process here. There was a public meeting. They were able to make, you know, your clients were able to make their objections. You're not claiming they didn't have due process, are you?
Not. That was argued in the district court. That's not appealed. So, no, I'm not saying that they,
all right,
they haven't. All I can say, Your Honor, is there isn't any case that that addresses a factual situation like this. The 60-day rule statute is supposed to be punitive. There are cases that say that repeatedly. It's supposed to punish cities for not doing things the right way, and the city didn't do it the right way here.
Isn't it supposed to ensure that action is taken within 60 days, and in this case, action was taken by the city in 60 days?
Yes, Your Honor. Our position is that an action was purportedly taken, but it wasn't actually taken because the vote wasn't legally effective under the planning statute.
I have a question for you about,
sure,
the slander of title claim.
Absolutely.
On page 25 of your brief, you state here, the city voted to certify its fees to appellant's property taxes against the advice of its own attorney, who admitted to the district court that he instructed the city council not to certify its claim debt to appellant's property. At the very least, this advice imputed upon the city a high degree of awareness of the probability of the probable falsity of its resolution. In my reading of the record, it's not entirely clear when the advice was provided by the attorney. Argue it was before the resolution, the city argues it was after. Can you point me to some evidence in the record itself as to when the advice was given?
Your Honor, I think that's a fact issue. There was a, well, first of all, there was a closed session meeting in October of, sorry, my memory is failing me, the 2 months prior to this resolution being adopted, 2016, where the city received legal advice. Mr. Templin, my esteemed opposing counsel here, says that the advice was given after the city adopted this resolution. I personally think it doesn't matter. I think the city adopted this resolution that created a tax lien on my client's property. And at some point, it became aware that that was illegal. And it actually submitted a brief to this court in the prior appeal on this matter, saying that the city doesn't have authority to do what it did. It didn't stipulate to judgment in the prior appeal. It didn't rescind its resolution. until the very, very, very end of the litigation, the night before that we were back here the last time arguing to this court. So at some point, if it wasn't malicious to begin with, it became malicious for the city to force my clients to spend $14,000 defending a decision that they knew was wrong and didn't even defend. So I think it's a fact issue. I think it has to be remanded to the district court to make that determination. Your Honor, could I say one more sentence? I'm out of time.
Sure.
I was just going to alert the court to a there's a citation to a case in my brief.
I didn't realize time was up. I'm sorry. I should defer to the presiding judge.
Yeah. I was just going to note. I cited to a case. It's called Wooski versus Strasburg and Fine, 906 Northwest 2nd, 586. That was just overturned less than 2 months ago by the Supreme Court. I just wanted to call that to the court's attention, and it was overturned for reasons other than the reason I cited it in my brief, which was the proposition that you can't contract for something that's forbidden by statute. I think that's still a sound legal principle, but the case that I cite in my brief was just overturned. So thank you.
Yep, thank you for that clarification, counsel. Counsel, for responding, you will have 15 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. We've all chosen quite a day to be talking about sitting on a patio looking out at the lake. My name's Justin Temple, and I represent the city here. It's the city of the village of Minnetonka Beach. For brevity, I'll just say city. Council's pointed out that there are a bunch, I think he used the term, of issues. There are quite numerous issues here. There were 10 at the district court. There are 7 that are raised on appeal. I'll answer any of the court's questions, of course, but I'll focus on the items that council focused on and address those first. The first one is the city's procedure here about how it went about processing this appeal that was raised by Ms. Matthews and Mr. Hacker about their neighbor's patio project. The city's process is plainly authorized by the Planning Act. 462.357 subdivision 6.1 specifically gives the Board of Adjustments, and the City Council was sitting as the Board of Adjustments here, the power to hear and decide appeals from administrative decisions. That is exactly this fact pattern. Any claim that comes up that a city's administrative staff made a mistake or decided something incorrectly, any appeal that comes before the Board of Adjustments can be heard by that body and dealt with by that body. That is specific statutory authority. The statute cited by Council, 462.354 subdivision 2, talks about that the Planning Commission must hear about it first, or that's his perspective on it. I'll get to that in a second. But it says that the Planning Commission should weigh in, and then the Board of Adjustments will deal with the appeal. As the district court recognized, the administrator sat in the role of representative here of the Planning Commission. Is there a form?
About that.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Did the Planning Commission authorize the Planning and Zoning Administrator to review and report to the board pursuant to 462.354 subdivision 2?
There was no action taken by the Planning Commission. What the district court understood is that that was the role of the Planning Administrator. As counsel pointed out, he's a consultant. He works for a private company, or he did at the time work for a private company, and the city retains him in that role as zoning administrator. That's a fairly common practice for small cities to do. They can't afford or can't sustain individual staff members and keep them busy for a full day, so they employ people from private companies to serve in those roles for them, and that was Mr. Gazzola's role here. So he was in that position to advise the Board of Adjustments about the issues, about what was in the appeal, and he did that. And that satisfies that if that statute even has to be considered because of the explicit authorization found elsewhere in the Municipal Planning Act.
Council,
yes.
Let's assume, just for argument's sake, that there was a violation of 462.354 subdivision 2, that provision that we've just been talking about. What would be the appropriate remedy in your view?
There's only one. There's two. I like council's suggestion that it's no harm, no foul, but I don't think that's terribly realistic. I think the only realistic thing the court could do, if this court believes that there was no authorization for the city to undertake the procedures that it undertook, and that its decision is therefore has to be addressed in some way, remand is the only thing that can occur.
To the city.
To the city. Remand to the city to review this again, to go through the process as directed by that statutory provision. Again, I don't believe that that's what the city is required to do, but if this court disagrees with me, that is the remedy.
Why do you think the city is not required to do that?
Because it has specific authorization elsewhere in the Planning Act to take the exact action it did take.
But why, how does that override this section of the statute then?
I think there's a lot of situations in the Planning Act that if you read them in isolation from each other, it's going to seem as though they're in conflict. But I think I would encourage the court especially to look at another section of the Planning Act to understand about this, the idea that it's a mandated procedure that the Planning Commission hear at first. There is a circumstance elsewhere in the Planning Act, it's 357 subdivision 4, that explicitly talks about the Planning Commission must act first before the city can do anything final with regard to a zoning ordinance amendment. That's a particular kind of change. It's a significant change. Council mentioned the Planning Commission's role typically is to talk about uses, land uses within a city. That is true. When you're amending a zoning ordinance, you have to have that feedback. You must. It's explicit in the statute. There isn't similar language in subdivision 2 that has that same mandatory character. It just isn't there. So we're talking about a situation where maybe it's directory, maybe that would be the preferred approach, but it is not a fundamental error by the city. The city is and was right to, and correct to follow the procedure that's outlined in 357 subdivision 6.1.
Isn't 354 the more specific provision than the general authority to hear appeals?
Well, I think that in this case, the most specific thing you have is 357 subdivision 6.1. It can't be more on point. That section specifically says, to hear and decide appeals where it is alleged that there is an error in any order, requirement, decision, or determination made by an administrative officer in the enforcement of the zoning ordinance. That is exactly what we're talking about in this case. Mr. Gazzola made the determination that the appellant's appeal to the city was incorrect. They're alleging he was wrong about that. He's an administrative officer. He was enforcing the zoning ordinance, and they're saying that his determination was wrong. This provision commits that sort of process directly to the Board of Adjustments, and that's exactly who heard it in this case. Council also mentioned the possibility that because of the operation of 1599, that this court could go ahead and overturn the appeal on substance. There is a case that addresses your question, Judge Hooten. It's Johnson v. Cook County. It isn't directly on point, but what it does say is that the mandatory provisions, the punitive provisions of 1599, are when a administrative agency in cities count don't make a decision at all, when they completely blow the deadline and they fail to comply. 1599 is not to punish cities when they don't act correctly, it's to make sure that cities act. The underlying purpose of 1599 is to make sure that cities decide issues within 60 days or an extension thereof. Yeah.
Can I just, I just want to make sure I'm understanding your argument here today with reference to what is required for an appeal such as this. Are you claiming that under this more specific provision And I think it was 357.
It's 357, subdivision 6, and it's open paren 1, closed paren.
Okay. That because of the nature of this appeal, that it did not have to go through the Planning Commission?
That is correct. That's what the city determined.
And the requirement in the other statute that requires it to go through the Planning Commission is takes into account an applicant for a permit who is offering a design relative to some remodeling or renovation on their property. And the Planning Commission has to look at it and approve it or not approve it. Is that how it works?
That's correct, Your Honor. I think you phrased it better than I did. I appreciate that. But that's exactly right. When you're talking about an application that talks about how the land is going to be used, about how a building is going to be situated on a site, how the setbacks might work, how the hardcover might work, and there are some issues with that in this case. If that were the application, the Planning Commission should weigh in on those sorts of things. But when you're talking only about an appeal to a decision that's being made relative to something else, you're not talking about the initial judgment. You're talking about revisiting the initial judgment, and therefore the Board of Adjustments can hear that directly. And that's what that statute says.
But doesn't 462.354 explicitly reference 462.357 subdivision 6? So it seems to me that 354 is more specific because it references the other statute that you were referring to. It says in 354, subdivision 2, it says the board shall have the power set forth in sections 462.357 subdivision 6 and 462.359 subdivision 4.
It shall have the power, and that's exactly what I'm arguing here, is it does, and it did.
Right. But then
it has
how
the power.
Can,
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Can subdivision
you.
6 be more specific when subdivision 6 is a general authority and this is more specific about the Board of Adjustment and Appeals in the role of the Planning Commission?
I'm not sure I agree about the specificity issue because they're both talking about the Board of Adjustment and Appeals. 357.6 is also talking about that same body. What we're talking about is a specific issue regarding, as Judge Hooten was talking about, it's not the initial decision about the plan. It's the reference to revisiting that decision, and the Board of Adjustment doesn't need to hear about it a second time from the underlying body in most of those cases. When it's an initial decision about usage, it does. And that's how those two statutes interact with each other. Again, if I could, back to what the potential for the remedy is. 1599, again, is not an outcome that should result here because that applies to a situation where a city completely fails to take a position at all. It just takes in an application and throws it in a drawer and ignores it. That's what 1599 was designed to deal with. All of the case law that has over time honed in on what's mandatory and what's directory in that statute, and that's all cited in the briefs here, but Johnson v. Cook County is the most recent discussion of that, and it talks about the only mandatory provision is to make a decision, not to get it procedurally correct 100%. If this court finds that that didn't happen, 1599 is not a possible remedy here.
All right. Now, the argument that's being made is that this action, because it didn't follow the correct procedures, is void. And let's assume we do not accept your argument about the differing, which of the differing statutes apply here, or which ordinances apply. If that is the case, can you cite us to a case that says just because you've got some nominal procedural error, that doesn't mean that the decision of the board would be void?
Johnson v. Cook County is what I would point to.
Okay.
Again, it's not directly on point, but it does specifically address the possibility of applying the nuclear option under 1599, the full-on weight of that statute, when there's a procedural irregularity underlying the decision. You can't undo that, the discretion that was outlined and used by the agency with a procedural defect. That's exactly what they're trying to do here.
All right. Could I just want to go to a different area.
Sure.
Now. That's with the regard to the allegation that there was a violation of the open meeting laws here. And I think you have very well made an argument that there's an exception to that when there's an attorney advice being given. The way this arose is within the context of a summary judgment motion, and apparently the allegation is the claim is that while there may have been some attorney advice given during that session, it went beyond just that purpose, and it actually got into business that would only be appropriately handled in an open session. My question to you is, how do you respond to that argument, and do we have an issue of material fact here based upon the record?
I appreciate the question. You do not have an issue of material fact. There's been no claim by either party about what was said inside the closed session. I wouldn't disclose that because it's attorney-client privilege. Mr. Steinhoff wouldn't disclose that because he doesn't know what was said in that meeting. And the idea that it was city business that was discussed, my answer to that is, of course it was. We weren't talking about anything but city business, but it cleanly fits within the exception for attorney-client privilege communications. Let's think about what they were being asked, what the city was being asked to do. The city was being asked to reopen the appeal. That was the very subject of this litigation. I had to give the city council advice. Again, I'm going to be general here, and I see my time is out, but I'll finish. I had to give advice about that. I can't get into the specifics of what the advice was, but in general, the advice was talking exactly about how reopening the appeal would affect the litigation and our strategy in that litigation, and whether they should do that has a great impact on whether how this case might turn out. And that is right at the center of what the attorney-client privilege is all about. As the Brainerd Daily Dispatch case, and again, that was before litigation had been filed. There's a lot of things going into that, but the crux of that case is when there's a need for absolute confidentiality, that's when the attorney-client privilege exception applies. That's true here. If we had that discussion in an open meeting, we would have had to have it directly in front of Mr. Steinhoff's clients who were in attendance at that meeting. That's not tenable. We couldn't have done that. We couldn't have been candid. I couldn't have given candid advice, and the council couldn't have asked candid questions. We would have had to be cagey. The attorney-client privilege is designed to allow candid communication between the parties, and that's what we were doing in that instance. And one last thing, if I could, about the idea of attorney advice and when it was given. I think that it's clear from the record that when that certification case came to this court previously, the dates of all of that are clear. The advice that I gave regarding that case came after I was appointed to be in it. It didn't come before the lawsuit happened, when the decision was made. It didn't come until after the lawsuit had happened, and I got appointed to represent the city with regard to that matter. I wasn't talking to them about certification or anything else prior to there being a lawsuit. My role is not as general city attorney. I'm a litigation attorney. I get appointed at that point. So I appreciate you giving me a little extra time. Thank you.
So is there something in the record that you can point to that confirms that timing?
It would be in the record of that decision, that this court's decision in the previous matter. It certainly shows
the timing of your advice, I mean.
Oh, the timing of my advice? No, I mean, again, we're in a situation where, yes, there was a closed meeting prior, but that was about the ongoing litigation we're here for today. That lawsuit had been going on for almost a year already at that point, and we were there to talk about that. The certification happened 2 months later. That wasn't even on my radar. I had no idea what they were doing with that. Then they get sued over that issue. It comes here on certiorari. I get appointed to represent the city on that matter. Then that advice, whatever it was, would have occurred. It wouldn't have happened prior. And that's all I've got in terms of the record.
Thank you.
Thank you. District Court should be affirmed. Thanks.
Thank you, Counsel.
Your Honor, with your permission, I'll address the open meeting law question. Mr. Templin is right. I don't know what happened at that meeting because my clients weren't allowed to conduct discovery on it. The open meeting law claim and the discovery order are kind of tied together. They had a closed session meeting right before they had a vote on whether to reopen this matter. And I'm sure it's true that there was legal advice given at that meeting, but after the meeting was done, they came out and they voted on the other matter without any discussion.
But aren't they so interrelated? I mean, how could an attorney give advice without necessarily talking about the issues that are coming before the board?
It's not his advice. It's not his advice that is the open meeting law violation. It's that they decided something, whether to reopen the appeal or not, that was regular city business. And they did it, the record suggests, while they were in this closed session.
But isn't that being done on advice of counsel? And if that's done on advice of counsel, that's part of the attorney-client privilege. It's not just the giving advice, but it's also asking the questions. It's the interaction between the two. I mean, in other words, let's say if you requested a privilege log and a separation of what is part of the attorney-client privilege communications and what is something that is a completely separate business issue that has nothing to do with the attorney-client privilege communications.
Your Honor, I mean, there are two different things. There's the attorney giving advice on the litigation, and then there is the decision itself. And the decision itself...
But what you're talking about, now you're actually talking about a second issue, and your opposing counsel didn't get to it, but there's actually work product privilege, which directly relates to the litigation, which is privileged, absolutely privileged, and then you have attorney-client privilege as well. So general legal advice, but you actually have two protections in place here that seem to be in play.
Correct, Your Honor. I think our argument is that the evidence suggests that there was a city business non-privileged decision made during this closed session meeting.
What would suggest that in the record?
Well, first of all, they came out, and they just voted on it. There was no public.
Well, can I ask you though, if the attorney and we don't know what the attorney's advice was, but if the attorney said you don't have to do this, or I recommend you don't do it for legal reasons, and here's the reasons, and they come out and vote, I mean, why does that suggest that they decided? They took a vote during the meeting. I mean, their attorneys just advised them on it. I guess I'm not seeing how it's so intertwined. I'm not sure how you can make this distinction.
Your Honor, I think there should have been some discussion during the open meeting on what they voted on. You can't get your attorney's advice. Yes.
But this was kind of an unusual procedure. There isn't normally a process for reconsideration of the type that took place here. It's at least my understanding from the record. And so was there any obligation, any statutory duty for the board to deliberate in detail?
There's no statutory duty. I don't know if they use Robert's Rules of Order. Maybe they had some procedural duty. But, I mean, they made a request. My clients made a request, and the city acted on it. They just acted on it for reasons they discussed in a closed session. I don't think they had any obligation to hear it in the first place, but they did. And having elected to do so, they should have done it in an open meeting. In my 25,
they did decide it in the open meeting. There just wasn't any much discussion, correct? I mean, there was
they
a
voted.
Vote in an open meeting, correct?
The vote was in an open meeting. but that's all there was. There was a vote. Can I briefly respond to the procedural question?
Yep.
So we have these two statutes that Mr. Templin referenced. The 462.357 subdivision 6, it gives substantive authority to a board of adjustment to decide certain things. This other statute, 462.354, applies to all types of decisions, all appeals made by a board of adjustment and appeals, and it requires planning commission consultation for all decisions.
What language in the 354 subdivision 2 is where you're saying it requires planning commission?
Yes, Your Honor. That statute is it establishes a board of appeals. So everything a board of appeals does is done pursuant to this organizational statute, and it says that all appeals have to go through the planning commission.
Right, and where's the mandatory language for the planning commission?
It's at the very end. If you, it's in subdivision 2, the very last sentence. It's in any municipality in which
okay,
the planning.
Thank you. Got it.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. I ask that you reverse the district court.
Thank you both. Counsel is extensively briefed and well argued. We appreciate that. We'll be issuing an order within the 90-day statutory time frame. Thank you.
Thank you.